KCAR Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin. He's catching a flight right now, right back from Arizona. He'll be back in the head seat tomorrow, but right now you've got me. And you know what? We've got a great show planned. I can't wait to get going on some of this stuff. LSU traveling all the way to the Chrysler Center tonight. U of M currently 0-2. Back-to-back losses for the Wolverines. We'll talk about what the momentum of both teams is going into this, of course, bitter rivalry game. We'll talk about who could make the difference and all of that. Also, the NFL Hall of Fame. Let not be lost in the commotion of the weekend that we've got a few new players who will be enshrined coming up soon into Canton, and they deserve our attention as well. Special shout out to Kurt Warner, our favorite caller, Ray from Indiana's number one player. Also, we'll be talking to the Sean Tate, CBS Radio producer and host in Atlanta. He was actually in Houston for the Super Bowl. He'll be on the show today to give us an overview of what went wrong for the Atlanta Falcons in that one. He'll give us also his takes on, you know, what the city of Atlanta is feeling. They must be absolutely dismayed, unfortunately. So have to focus a little bit on the negatives there, but he'll be over the phone lines with us today. We'll also talk a little bit about the Pistons and the Red Wings, both Detroit teams, trending upwards just slightly, but a little bit. But so much to talk about on today's WKR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Isaac Constance. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. The Michigan State Spartans travel to rival Michigan tonight in a rematch of last Sunday's game in which MSU came away with a 70-62 win. The Wolverines come in having lost two straight, while the Spartans come in having won two straight after a loss Ohio State Saturday night. Michigan's bubble grasp seems to be slipping. Michigan State, however, is trending upwards. That's right. In the tournament by all projections, but they need to keep winning to strengthen their resume. The Spartans currently sit fifth in the Big Ten standings with a 6-4 league record, a 3-game winning streak in that category as well. The Wolverines, on the other hand, find themselves in ninth place right now, posting a 4-6 league record. Tip time is set for 9 p.m. at the Chrysler Center, and you can watch the game online or on ESPN. The University of Michigan football team is looking at Hawaii's defensive coordinator, Kevin Lempa, for a potential non-coaching position with the program. Lempa met with Michigan officials this past weekend. Jim Harbaugh would most likely be looking to add Lempa as a defensive analyst. Rick Fanati, the previous defensive analyst, took a head coaching job at John Carroll University this offseason, and Lempa has a history with current Michigan defensive coordinator Don Brown, having previously worked on Brown's staff while he was at Boston College. Kirk Cousins, everybody's favorite Spartan, right? Well, he made headlines Monday for a video that surfaced of him pushing a volunteer referee at a charity football game. No, I'm not kidding. That was over this weekend. Cousins got a little bit heated and apparently contesting a call, he decided to give a nice two-handed blow to the referee. The former Michigan State quarterback was participating in the game against Doug Flutie's team for the Celebrity Sweat Flag Football Challenge. The video shows Cousins screaming for a flag because a member of the defense knocked the ball away as Cousins attempted to get the ball set during a two-minute drill at the end of the game. While I'm sure the member of Team Flutie was just doing this in a joking manner, Cousins did not appear to be entertained. Not a good look for a professional athlete in a charity football game, that's for sure. Michigan State women's basketball star Tori Jankowska was added to the list of players in contention for the Wade Trophy, which is presented annually to the National Player of the Year as voted on by the Women's Basketball Coaches Association. It's actually the equivalent of the Naismith Award over on the side of women's college basketball. So very high praise just being selected for that. Jankowski currently sits second in the Big Ten and 11th in the nation in scoring at 21.6 points per game. She is the leader of a Michigan State squad that itself is fifth in the Big Ten at a 16-7 overall record. Jankowski has had a couple of milestone achievements already, breaking the MSU record for all-time scoring, and she currently sits just 38 points away from reaching 2,000 career points. Lansing United, everybody's favorite local amateur soccer team, plays in the NPSL, and they released their schedule today. The team will be playing 17 total matches between exhibition and conference, 10 of those matches coming at home. For the first time in three seasons, the team will not play a game on Michigan State University's campus at DeMartin. Instead, they will play their annual clash with Detroit FC at Lansing Soccer Complex, which has been the home of the club since it was first formed. Season ticket packages are on sale for $100, and the club will kick off the season at home on May 6th against Ann Arbor Football Club. A little more rivalry right there. The Detroit Pistons. How about them? Picked up their third win in their last four games last night with a 113-96 victory over the Philadelphia 76ers. It was a balanced attack for Detroit, with seven players finding themselves ending up in double digits, led by Marcus Morris's 19 points. The Pistons shot a whopping 94% from the free throw line. Hey, Sparns, take some notes. In the game, but they struggled from three yet again, making just five long bombs on 22 attempts. The 76ers were without star forward Joel Embiid, who sat out due to a left knee contusion. With the win, despite being four games below 500 at 24-28, Detroit now finds itself in the eighth spot in the East, a half game ahead of Michael Jordan's Charlotte Hornets. The Pistons will be back in action on Wednesday as the Los Angeles Lakers make their yearly visit to the Palace. Tip time for that game is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. The Detroit Red Wings begin a tough stretch of their schedule tonight when they host the Columbus Blue Jackets. This game begins a stretch of four games against the NHL's top three teams. The Red Wings activated forward Steven Ott on Monday while placing center Franz Nielsen on the injured reserve list with an upper body injury. Both he and defenseman Nicholas Cronwall are expected to miss the next two games with injuries. Big blows there to the Red Wings. Goaltender Peter Mrazek is expected to get the nod after posting a 1-0 shutout against Nashville on Saturday. This game features the NHL's worst power play unit in Detroit, 30th overall, and the NHL's best power play unit in Columbus. Puck drop is set for 7:30 p.m. In other news, the Boston Bruins fired coach Claude Julien in his 10th season with the team. Julien had led Boston to a 26-23-6 record this season, good for 58 points. Before the firing, Julien had been the longest tenured active NHL coach. Assistant coach Bruce Cassidy will take over the interim job for Boston while they search for Julien's replacement. Julien is the fourth NHL coach already this season to be fired, with the St. Louis Blues, Florida Panthers, and New York Islanders all feeling the need for moves as well. Chicago's Joel Quenneville is now the longest tenured head coach in the NHL. That wraps it up for your current sports quick hit headliners. I'm Isaac Constance. Tweet at me at ISAACCONSTANS if you got any questions, any comments about today's program. Also, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-WKR, and share what's on your mind. Let's start the show.
Tom, come on up. Get your trophy. You want the MVP trophy? The MVP trophy? Yeah.
Tom?
Hi.
Welcome to Shields MRI. Would you please remove all jewelry and place it in the locker?
Oh, yeah. Sure, no problem.
Tom Brady trusts Shields MRI. You can, too.
Is that all?
Actually, no.
I forgot this one. It's kind of new.
We're going to need to get you a bigger locker.
Roger that.
Shields Healthcare. Go where the pros go.
Yeah, poor Roger Goodell, I'll tell you. The NFL commissioner hasn't had the most pleasant of previous encounters with the New England Patriots, especially over the last few days. First there, you actually heard him having to present the Super Bowl MVP trophy separately to Tom Brady. And you heard him asking, do you want the MVP trophy first or the Super Bowl trophy first? The Lombardi trophy, of course. And Tom Brady, I guess, answered the MVP trophy. But Roger Goodell, he's on stage. He's given this grand presentation. And, of course, he's got to act complimentary of Brady. The guy just put together one of the greatest Super Bowl performances of all time. 24 records were set, including completions, attempts, yards. Brady had 62 attempts on the day. Passed for, 426 yards. Unbelievable comeback in the Super Bowl's first overtime game. And Roger Goodell wasn't able to enjoy it too much because after that, you heard, first of all, a Tom Brady commercial where it's a local New England health insurance provider or something like that. And they asked Tom Brady to remove all his jewelry. He had four rings, but he forgot about the extra one that was lining his pockets because, of course, the Super Bowl gave him another one. And then after asking if he wanted another locker to contain all of his jewelry, Brady acutely answers, Roger that. Of course, not too veiled of a shot at, again, the poor NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell. And then lastly, you've got the Super Bowl trophy presentation directly after the game. Of course, the commissioner's got to be there for that. He's the face of the entire league. And he hands over the trophy to Robert Kraft, who has previously been quite vocal and verbose in his attacks on Roger Goodell and the NFL for carrying the suit so long against Tom Brady. Of course, again, I hate to reuse the word, Deflategate. That was only 2 years ago. So, yeah, Kraft actually said, right after receiving that trophy, and you heard the course of boos, but 2 years ago we won our fourth Super Bowl down in Arizona. I told our fans that was the sweetest one of all. But a lot has transpired over the last 2 years, and I don't think that needs any explanation. Again, a not-too-veiled criticism of Roger Goodell and the NFL. So, you know, I kind of felt pity for the commissioner of the NFL for the first time of my life. And yeah, no, I mean, it's just, that's an awkward situation to be in. You've got to almost confess that you were wrong. You've got to make sure and try to make amends with all of these guys so that it's not super awkward when you're presenting them the most prestigious award in sports. But at the same time, I don't. You know, Tom Brady, the Patriots, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, they might not have been the most mature, the most gracious in accepting the Lombardi trophy or the Super Bowl MVP trophy or their rings or whatever it might be. But at the same time, they're the ones who are in this for the grandization of their ego, of their stock, of their market value, all of that. And Roger Goodell's job is to run a league without controversy that provides a good product, which it does. But his job is to entertain the fans, to keep the players, keep the breadwinners happy. And obviously, Roger Goodell failed when it came to the New England Patriots. So even though It was an awkward situation. I feel bad for the guy just because, you know, it's hard not to empathize with somebody when they've got to hand over the number one prize, the biggest possession that they have, over to what's become a mortal enemy, essentially. But at the same time, Roger Goodell, sorry, Commish, but you brought this on yourself. Anyway, just thought I wanted to start off the show that way. And it's not easy to skip out on a Super Bowl that was, like I said, record-setting in 24 different ways. The first overtime Super Bowl, the largest comeback, 25 points, trumping the previous 10-point record. You've got all sorts of talk swirling around it. But you know what? There's actually some local news and local happenings going on today that are quite important as well. Of course, I'm talking about the MSU men's basketball team traveling on over to Ann Arbor, that being a big game for both teams' playoff and postseason hopes. Obviously, nobody wants to get left out of the tournament in this state, but really this game is in many ways make or break for both teams, in my opinion. This is a game that features two teams, MSU 6-4 in the Big Ten, U of M 4-6. It'll be a tight grudge match, the previous game going in MSU's favor, despite the best efforts of Derek Walton. But, you know, in this game, it's all going to come down to who can establish their style of play. In many ways, these teams play identically in that they like to go small ball. For U of M, that's Maurice Wagner being the biggest guy in the court. You want him to stretch the floor. You want him to be able to knock down the corner three, trail the fast break, and manage to stretch that defense. For MSU, of course, put in the hands of Mr. Miles Bridges. He's been superb throughout the season, but especially upon return from injury. Also, Cassius Winston, how about that? Running away with the point guard position. 26 points in these last two games. Excellent. Also in the assist category, and of course, that's what he's known for. MSU, too, is shooting the three well in their last two games, averaging near 60% from beyond the arc. Against Nebraska, it was 66% on the game. It was absurd what the Spartans were able to do against U of M. That was still a healthy 46%. MSU has been on fire recently, finally finding their defensive stride as well, which is something that was concerning for this team to start the year. But MSU holding U of M to 62 points and just 34% shooting when the Wolverines visited last Sunday. Nebraska versus MSU, 61 points that day for the Cornhuskers, 25% from deep, 39%. Either way, you'll take that if you're MSU. And what the Spartans have done so well, and they've been so sharp in doing this, it's really always my preferred coaching strategy. Key in on the top player. You know, you focus on him. You try to limit him the best as possible. But you say, he's not going to beat us because one man doesn't beat us. You don't overhelp. You don't get sucked in. You don't let their offense entirely run their way over you because you get too intent on stopping one guy. You know what? If Derek Walton's getting to the foul line, shooting 15 of 16, you can live with that. No, of course, it's not ideal, but at the same time, as long as you're keeping their other key players off the scoreboard, off the significant contributions columns, then you're doing fine. In that last game, only two Wolverines were in double figures. That's Maurice Wagner and Derek Walton. But Muhammad Abdur Rahman and all of those guys, 5 points for him. TJ Wilson, 8 points. Zach Irvin, 0 in 36 minutes. If MSU can replicate that performance against U of M, where Walton has a good game and Wagner does okay. But the thing with Wagner, too, I mentioned not letting one man beat you because, you know, one man cannot beat you in a game. Wagner, they got him off the court. He had 4 fouls in that game. Same with Rockman. So big game last time for MSU. And then, of course, when the Spartans head over to Nebraska, they were similarly impressive. You had 5 Spartans in double figures in that game, including Kenny Goins. Oftentimes, it's the guy who you don't expect, who changes the game. Nick Ward also recovering from flu-like symptoms, but he's still got it working. And this is a game, too, that'll come down to the rebounding battle. U of M, 346th in the nation. That's atrocious. That's the bottom of the cellar. MSU 176th, middle of the pack. Of course, that stat might be a little bit inflated because MSU likes to get on the fast break. They like to force quick shots from opposing teams. They like to play heavy on-ball pressure instead of sinking into a 2-3 zone. But at the same time, MSU, even though their weakness, the chink in the armor this season has been big men, that's something that U of M, with DJ Wilson many times this season as their leading rebounder, yeah, that's not going to get the job done even against a beleaguered Spartan. So, hey, call in. Tell me what you think about the game. 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-WKR. And talk a little bit MSU, U of M in a fateful game that will really help shape the course of this Big Ten season. MSU also, just a few notes about this game. MSU was coming off that 72-61 win at Nebraska. It was actually the Spartans' first road victory since a 75-74 OT win at Minnesota on December 27th. Michigan right now is led by scoring with Derek Walton at 14. Zach Irvin, the guy who previously posted 0 points, a donut against MSU, 13.3, and then Moritz Wagner right there at 11.6. Miles Bridges, who missed 7 games in December with his ankle injury, leads MSU in scoring at 16.3 points per game. Nick Ward, 13. So there are a lot of big names to watch out for in this one. Of course, like I said, you want to limit Derek Walton if you're the Spartans, but at the same time, you want to limit his playmaking ability more than anything else. If he gets on the scoreboard, that's not going to do you in by itself. For Michigan, the key to that game will be hitting the three, something that they were entirely incapable of doing last time against MSU. If you can get Duncan Robinson firing away, if you can get Rahman on the scoreboard, that's going to look good. But the thing is, Michigan lives and dies by that metric. If they shoot another 27-34%, which they've been doing recently, they're not going to win this game because they are impotent inside. Right now, we actually have current sports production assistant Grant Essenmacher in studio. Grant, what do you think about this game coming up for the Spartans? And is this really the pivotal point for both teams' Big Ten seasons?
Well, you know, Isaac, thanks for having me on, by the way.
I think when you're looking at Michigan, and this is the ironic thing, because when you looked at the last game, before the last game, Michigan State, it was kind of looked at as a must-win for Michigan State. They had been coming off a couple losses. They were starting to slip in the Big Ten. They were 500. And then they won that game, beat Nebraska, so now they've won two straight. Now Michigan has lost two straight. That Ohio State loss wasn't a good loss at all. I mean, you can't lose to Ohio State at home. Ohio State doesn't have a good team this year. That's a bad loss at home. So you're looking at that. I think Michigan, I'm expecting a desperate effort from them tonight. I feel like they're going to come out. They're going to feel like they have to win the game. But you're right. You brought up a lot of good points. Whether Michigan wins or loses a lot of times is dependent on how they shoot from the outside. And they haven't been doing that well lately. And especially when you look at guys like Zach Irvin, Duncan Robinson has to get going. But I think Zach Irvin's the big key, and where he really struggles, he's just not – he plays the three for them, and he's not really quick enough to match up with other threes. State will guard him with Aaron Harris or Josh Langford. Both guys are quicker than Irvin, so it's harder for him to get around them. So really, he just needs to knock down open shots because it's going to be hard for him to beat those kind of guys off the dribble, I think.
For Michigan, too, they're tops in the nation in turnovers per game, tops in the Big Ten in that turnover margin category. MSU, like I mentioned, they like to play a lot of the one defense, as we call it in high school. That's man-to-man, that's uptight in the jersey. Try to get those five-second calls or just be as near to the ball handler as you can be. You want to force them into mistakes, get out on the transition, because there's no easier offense than when there's nobody in front of you. MSU, if they can force U of M uncharacteristically into some turnovers, watch out. then this could get to be even a runaway game. But if U of M is able to execute their offense, which they didn't do entirely poorly in this last matchup between the teams, they just weren't hitting their shots, then this could really change around. We've got a caller on right now, Ray from Indiana. Ray, I'm guessing you're picking Michigan in this game, huh?
Beat the bullies tonight. Beat them up.
Yeah.
People are thinking of Michigan bullies. They're a terrible, pathetic team. I hope you got to go out there and every game's like that, who shoots the best. I mean, come on, you guys got to shoot good too or you won't win. But anyways, it's going to be a tough one tonight because it's going to be desperation. They're 14-9. If they don't win this one, they're done for as far as making the tournament.
Yep. Yep. No, that's a good point, right? Who do you have in this game? Who do you think will come out victorious?
Go Spartans. Take care, buddy.
All right. You too, Ray. Ray from Indiana on line one right there. If you want to share your thoughts about MSU, U of M, or anything else on today's show, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Later, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Hall of Fame induction class. Also, Deshaun Tate, CBS radio producer and host in Atlanta, give us a little bit about the Super Bowl as well as his expertise in college basketball. But, you know, just a few more stats from this game. Izzo actually had a press conference yesterday, and there were some important things that he said going forward. One is that Nick Ward and Kenny Goins had the weekend off that allowed them to recover a little bit after battling the flu. Good rest for them, and I think it's good for MSU that this is actually a midweek game. It gave them a little while to recuperate. Even though this is a team that's hot, you don't want to cool down too much. At the same time, they're not entirely healthy. It's that type of year where there is the injury bug or the sickness bug going around, and you don't necessarily want to mess with that. Izzo also spoke on MSU alum Jamel Hill making her debut tonight and personality and host at ESPN Sports Center. That'll be fun. Izzo had a 20-minute talk with Cassius Winston after Sunday's practice. Quote, I told him he's not a freshman anymore. He's stepping up his game a lot. Izzo also mentioned that the key to the game was containing Derek Walton Jr., which obviously he's a guy that gave MSU fits last time, at least from the free throw line. But again, going forward in this game, it'll all come down to what MSU can do in terms of establishing their line of play on U of M. They're a team that shoots 38% from the field beyond the arc on the season, 47% from the field. Those are good numbers. But again, it's guys like Muhammad Ali, Abdur-Rahman, Duncan Robinson, Moritz Wagner. If you can either keep them off the court, because honestly, some of those guys aren't the best defenders, or if you could manage to pin them up and stick them in a corner, but not really give them good looks, this is a game that you will win. It is mind-boggling to me that this is a U of M team, though, that Ray's absolutely right. Sitting on 14-9, just like the Spartans, this is make or break in many ways for both of these teams. But Michigan, a little bit further back, eighth in the Big Ten Conference. This is a team that is coming off just two games ago, a 90-60 win against Indiana, one of the top teams in the country still. Even though there's all sorts of pandemonium in the Big Ten, it doesn't necessarily invalidate the fact that this is a team with talent, one of the best coaches in the nation, and Tom Crean. Indiana is a team that's so established as a program, you know that they'd get it on. And the thing is, to lose in that fashion to U of M, a team that has sputtered since, if you would have said anything, that would have been the turning point for their season. As I mentioned, instead, quite the opposite. 0-2 back-to-back losses for the Wolverines, ranking dead last in the Big Ten in field goal percentage defense and three-point percentage defense. Coming into this game, my pick would be an MSU win. And, you know, I didn't necessarily expect to be saying that a little while ago, but watching U of M just reel off following that MSU loss, they gave up a lead to Ohio State. It's not as if they just rolled over after playing a good game. It's not as if it was something where you could applaud them for a nice comeback, a good effort. Everybody played well, all of that usual junk that goes into trying to console yourself after a loss. It was a game where they were up 11 early, and Ohio State stormed back against them. Ohio State, at the end of the day, they were unable to stop some of the big names, the names that you would have targeted in on. Mark Loving, yes, didn't shoot the best field goal percentage, but played clutch down the stretch and finished with 17 points. Jason Tate as well, 13. Ohio State, they did what they wanted to do against U of M. And again, it's about making sure that you can establish your style of play. I think MSU, as hot as they are right now, I think they're able to do that. Grant, final pick for MSU U of M. Who you got tonight?
I'm going to agree with you, Isaac. I like Michigan State. I think it'll be close. Michigan will come out, play desperate. I think they'll do a better job against Derek Walton than they did last time. I think Irvin will play better than they did last time and kind of balance that out. But at the end of the day, I think the better team wins. I think the best Spartan tonight is going to be Nick Ward down low against Mo Wagner. Bridges will have a good game too, but I like Nick Ward to have a big game against Mo Wagner down low. It's a handful for that guy to deal with.
Good pick. Call in, share yours, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We're going to hit our first break in the hour right now. Coming up after the break, we'll talk a little more college basketball, but hey, I mean, the Super Bowl was just 2 days ago. We're not abandoning that just yet. We've got a guest on, Deshaun Tate, CBS radio producer and host in Atlanta. He was actually in the building. He's going to tell us about that and what's going on in Atlanta, as well as share his thoughts about the MSU U of M rivalry game tonight. Stay tuned to WKAR AM 870. Back on the air, Isaac Constance for WKR's Current Sports, filling in for Al Martin. He's actually catching a flight right now from Arizona on his way back to East Lansing, and he and I will actually be in attendance tonight covering the MSU U of M rivalry game at the Chrysler Center. Both teams 14-9, make or break game to say the least. But you know, the Super Bowl is far away as it seems. Maybe it doesn't for all y'all, but for me, having reported so extensively on it and having watched it, and boy, it took forever, it seemed like, just because you couldn't take your eyes away from the second half. It seems like it happened a few weeks ago just because of how big of a deal it was. Everybody was talking about it, but, you know, one day passes, attention dies down a little bit. That's how it goes after Super Bowl Sundays. But well, I want to bring up just a few records to remember. First, 24 separate Super Bowl records were broken. That ranges from most passes attempted in a game, 62 for Tom Brady, to combined first downs, 54 between the two teams. Falcons, one third down conversion for that entire team, 1 of 8. That definitely speaks to the tone of the game. James White, $600,000 a year man, went to University of Wisconsin-Madison the game before against Pittsburgh, had an aggregate 8 yards. He didn't do anything special in that except, you know, just record a Super Bowl record 14 receptions, 3 touchdowns, ultimately the difference maker in the game. And you'd be stupid not to at least acknowledge the fact that the guy was ultimately the X factor. He's the ones that the Falcons did not plan for. Falcons also had 99% chance of winning that game. 23 pass attempts for Matt Ryan. That was it. Julio Jones was 4 of 4 on receptions and complete, or receptions for attempts thrown to him. But time of possession, like I mentioned, over 40 minutes for the Patriots. At the end of the day, tough to beat. The Patriots were 17-0 this season when Deion Lewis played for them. The Falcons losing the Super Bowl, finally, means that the MVP of the regular season, I'm sorry, Matty Ice, but they have not lifted the Lombardi Trophy in 17 consecutive seasons. Ouch. And here's my favorite stat of all of this, is Tom Brady going into the Super Bowl. It was never, ever, ever
a question of what will the final score be. It was a question of what will the margin of victory be? Because Tom Brady, he's played everything from high-scoring games to low-scoring affairs, but at the same time, he had never won a Super Bowl before by more than 4 points, or never actually even played in a Super Bowl that was decided by more than 4 points. Yesterday, or Monday, or Sunday, the most influential Super Bowl of our generation, it was the first overtime game ever, but Tom Brady had his largest margin of victory or defeat, the largest game score decider ever in the Super Bowl. So with all of that in context, we actually have a man who was at the game in Houston currently, Deshaun Tate, CBS radio producer and host in Atlanta. Deshaun, what's Houston like right now?
Isaac, I'm going to tell you what, man. I'm so dreading getting back to Atlanta, not just because it's 85 degrees right now in H-Town, but because I'm almost kind of afraid to go. You know, I work for the flagship station of the Hawks and the Falcons, and I'm almost afraid to witness all the long faces and just all the disappointment and negative energy around the office. But seriously, man, at the end of the day, it was a very hard-fought game by the Falcons, and probably the biggest thing is that I don't think there's too much disappointment by most Falcons fans. They're still kind of rising up. There was a pep rally before, had a little something nice as they're welcoming the team off of the plane coming back from the game. And even though it's very disappointing, you know, it's not a total loss because we're talking about the Falcons, who have only had, what, two or three Super Bowl trips, although they've never won one, only had two or three Super Bowl trips in the entirety as far as being an organization or whatnot. But it's still a little crazy here in H-Town. Most people have already went back home. I'll be on my way back to Atlanta tonight and just kind of see how things are going to kind of be for myself. But I will tell you what, there is some disappointment by Atlanta fans for sure, probably more than anything because of the simple fact that they had such a big lead, three and a half, four touchdown lead.
Yeah, 25 points was the comeback for the Patriots last night, and Sunday night. I guess it does seem more recent. But anyway, Deshaun, the atmosphere at that game, it must have been so euphoric. The Falcons fans must have just been so ready for their first Super Bowl crown. And when did the momentum, not in the game, but inside the stadium, when did that doubt start to creep into mind?
It was crazy. It seemed like probably after Julio's big first down, he got his two touchdowns in. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, where he got his two tippy toes in. It seemed like the momentum was gaining for the Falcons and things of that nature, but things really started kind of taking a turn a little bit after that. And you could almost kind of feel it. If you're a person who, you know, watches sports regularly, which I'm sure you do, we all do, you can kind of see, you don't want to leave Tom Brady. I don't care if you're up 21-3, 28-3, whatever the case may be, how much time is left on the clock. As long as there is time left and enough to be able to get a couple scores, the New England Patriots, arguably the best defensive team in all of pro football, and going up against an offensive threat the way that the Atlanta Falcons are, but the Atlanta Falcons don't have the Super Bowl experience outside of Dan Quinn when he was over in Seattle. So from that standpoint, you know, you almost had to feel some sort of concern for the Atlanta Falcons at that point. And knowing if the New England Patriots can put together their offense, which wasn't, I don't think was absolutely terrible in the first half. I think that they just kind of had to get a few things going, had a couple loose screws, a couple loose ends to tie up. And definitely, as long as they were able to do that, you know, they make a run. And anytime you got a guy out there who's in contention for being the best quarterback to ever play the game of football in history of it, then you almost have to consider that some kind of run is going to be made. We knew that Atlanta wouldn't stand still with, you know, having that kind of game. And so from that standpoint, you kind of got to tip your hat to the Patriots for the run that they were able to make at the end.
Definitely. What player moment, what will you remember from that Super Bowl, Super Bowl 51?
I would probably say Tom Brady. I mean, the consensus would definitely say Tom Brady. I mean, just because of, you know, the atmosphere around the town and just everything that he brings with it. I mean, we're talking about a guy, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily feel that he may or may not be you know, the best quarterback to ever play the game. When you're looking at the talent that's around him and has been around him for quite some years, as long as you have Belichick, the head coach, as long as you have Tom Brady, then you really cannot, you know, argue too much of the success that they've been able to have. And you kind of got to tip your cap to that. But I think it is Tom Brady just because of the performance that he's been able to put out there. But outside of him, and if we're talking about a person that's not a New England Patriot, they definitely got to go with Julio Jones, who had an outstanding and a phenomenal performance as well.
Where do you rank Brady and Belichick, that tandem or individually in their respective ranks of all time?
Me personally, I would say number one. I mean, I am definitely a huge advocate for football, obviously. I'm more of a basketball guy, which is that seems pretty obvious. But
yeah,
I don't really like to speak too much on a behalf of something that I wasn't able to see with my own eye.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, we can all go back and we can watch games from, you know, before our time and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, you know, we become prisoners of the moment, and that's just by nature. So from that standpoint, I've got to go with Belichick and Brady, because not only what they've done, but what makes them the best tandem, in my personal opinion only, is the effect that they've had on you in making the runs that they've been able to make. Now, granted, they lost two Super Bowls in the process, but when you're able to go to seven and you win five out of that seven, and the two that you lost is to the same team, it just kind of seems like it's had your number as of late in regards to the New York Giants.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've just got to go with those two guys, because we're not talking about a young Tom, but we're talking about a guy that is
39 now.
A guy that's, you know, pushing 40 years old and still able to do it, and he probably isn't done at this point. So from that standpoint, you almost have to consider that it's got to be those two.
I agree entirely. They're absolutely number one and one in my ranks as well. Currently talking with Deshaun Tate, CBS radio producer and host in Atlanta. Deshaun, as much credit as we've bestowed upon the Patriots, and rightfully so, 25-point comeback, overtime win, the first in Super Bowl history. It's hard to ignore those accomplishments, but it's equally hard to turn a blind eye to the collapse that the Atlanta Falcons did suffer through. Who's to blame, would you say? And is there a palpable anger at any members of the Falcons organization, like Dan Quinn or Kyle Shanahan, for some of those late game play calls?
No, I don't think there's really, a blame. You know, sometimes when you drop big leads such as that, I mean, obviously the big issue here was, instead of playing to win, we saw that the Falcons started playing not to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And in a position like that, you're kind of playing yourself into losing a football game or any game, regardless of the sport. But that said, sometimes you just have to tip your cap to the people that were able to go out there and make the adjustment in order to get it done. And it makes people question, were they toying with the Falcons that
yeah.
whole time? And I don't think that that's necessarily the case. But one thing that I will say is that the Falcons, they fought a hard, tough-fought game. And, you know, you got to give them credit for what they were able to do and what they were able to do all season with that offense. And we know Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, now looking like the former offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, going on to higher heights in San Francisco in the Bay mm-hmm. Area. But I don't think you can really blame one person. You win as a team, you lose as a team. It's on Dan Quinn, the head coach. It's on the offensive and defensive coordinators. It's on the special teams. It's on the defense. It's on the line, the quarterbacks, the receivers, all across the board, the entire offense. You win as a team and you lose as a team, and I think that that's something that the Atlanta Falcons are going to have to face. But they're, to me, I get a feeling that their future looks a little bit brighter than most of the consensus yeah. of the NFL team.
Final football question for you, Deshaun. It's a new hire for the Atlanta Falcons. As you mentioned, Kyle Shanahan moving on to bigger and brighter things in San Francisco, head coach there. The Falcons today announced that Steve Sarkisian would take the reins as offensive coordinator for them. Good hire, do you think? And what seems to be the mood surrounding that pick?
For Sarkisian?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that there's so many things that have to happen the right way in order for the terms of that deal to be done. Do I think it's Do I think it's great as far as from a football mastermind and what he can bring to the table as an offensive coordinator? Yes, I think that it would be great. But with some of the things that he has had to face coming off of USC and then moving into that Bama position and not really getting settled and then, you know, making a move over to the Falcons where they've had their fair share for sure of distractions off the field. They don't need that. You already witnessed the Michael Vick thing, and you had to come out of that. You've already witnessed the, the noise gate, if I'm not mistaken, you know, pumping artificial noise through the stadium and things of that nature. You know, you're just now kind of coming out of that. There's also been some other conversations about multiple other things, some reports that you've seen throughout the last few weeks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You don't need that kind of negativity. And so by adding Sarkisian from a on-the-field standpoint only, I think can be a really good move. But from an off-the-field standpoint, I'm not sure if that will really pay benefit to the Atlanta Falcons at this time anyways, unless you can kind of put Sarkisian in a position as to where you're seeing some improvement, you're seeing some growth, some maturity, and some responsibility in those regards.
Gotcha. Switching directions, Deshaun, I don't have to tell you, but a cyclone definitely swept through the realm of college basketball this past weekend. The 10 top teams, 6 went down. Also, a few other ranked teams did. Which upset surprised you most?
The surprising part of which team exactly?
Yeah. Yeah, which team that went down?
I don't know. You know, it's tough. I think from what we've been seeing is UCLA. Mm-hmm. I think that between UCLA and Kansas, I think those are the two best teams in the country right now, my personal opinion. Maybe not playing the best right now. We've seen Kansas come away with a really, really close win at Kansas State, which I don't think it should have been that close for as much better as Kansas is than Kansas State, regardless of the fact that it is a rivalry game. And it was in Little Manhattan, the Little Apple in Kansas. But I think those are the two best teams. And I think that between those teams getting lost, taking losses, and obviously with UCLA being a team that, I think they're probably the best team in the country. And I'm going to tell you straight up, maybe they don't have all the experience that maybe Kansas does as far as wins and things of that nature. You know, going on, you know, we're talking about a Kansas team that's working on tying John Wooden's record for most consecutive regular season conference championships at 13 this year. That's unbelievable to think about. Something that most people aren't even thinking about at this point. But UCLA has it all. They have guards, they have shooters, they have slashers, playmakers, bigs in the paint, post presence. They're not the most defensive team, but I don't think you really have many defensive teams out west. I think they're the best team out west, even over Arizona, the number one team in the country being Gonzaga as well. Adding all those teams to the mix, and arguably the best player in college basketball that's going to be nominated for a player of the year being Lonzo Ball, who's only a freshman. If you see some of the things that UCLA taking a loss anytime soon, or even in the NCAA tournament, or you look at the few losses that they've had recently, I think their biggest downfall would end up being Steve Alford being outcoached, the head coach of UCLA.
Okay.
I think UCLA is probably the biggest surprise for all the teams that you've been seeing has been falling as of late.
Gotcha. Yeah, Lonzo Ball, I've got to say, I've rarely seen such an effervescent player at the point guard position. Last time I can remember being so impressed by a freshman over there was Derrick Rose, and you know, sorry for the injuries, but we all know how that turned out, at least in college and his early NBA career. Switching it back to the local category, of course, U of M and MSU play tonight. What do you foresee taking place as the Spartans travel to the Chrysler Center?
I like Michigan State to win the game. You know, I was listening to you guys a little bit before I was brought on. We were talking about how Michigan State has to definitely do a better job at controlling Derek Walton, which is pretty tough to do because, speaking of tough, he's probably the toughest person on their team.
Yes.
I don't think that Michigan State really has the toughness that they're used to having. I mean, we got to remember, Michigan State needs to get back to doing some of the things that they once were. They were a much better free-throw shooting team growing up in the prime years of Tom Izzo's career, as well as winning that rebounding margin. I know that Michigan State has, you know, two or three top front court players between Carter and Schilling, and I think there's another guy I can't exactly remember at the moment. But they're going to have to start getting back out into transition, for some easy baskets. And you have to put – and some people may not necessarily agree with this, and I know that Tum-Tum Nairn has the experience, but I think that the team plays better when you have Cassius Winston out there. And I think most people feel that way. He's kind of got that playground game, so sometimes he takes a couple more flashier dribbles than really need to be and kind of out of control sometimes as he's penetrating towards the rim. But, you know, the most of your production that you're getting is out of guys that he came in with, and those are who you're relying on right now. And that's being Ward, Nick Ward, and Miles Bridges. And these we're talking about guys that played with Cassius Winston coming up. So if you want some kind of success, you've got to put those guys out there that's used to playing together, you know. And from that standpoint, I think that that's definitely where you have to start, you know, implementing Cassius Winston into the rotation a lot more, especially if Tum-Tum Nairn isn't going to use that first step, the quickness. He's the quickest player in college basketball. He can drive past anybody, penetrating all the way to the rim. And as long as he finishes, which he's been doing a better job of as an upperclassman, you shouldn't have a problem. But all this east to west dribbling for Tum-Tum Nairn, and as long as he's going north and south and he's penetrating and breaking down the defense, I don't think he does it enough. But if he's not doing that, then I almost can't use you as much as I would like to. And I'm putting the younger guy out there on the floor, and that's Cassius Winston.
Final question for you, Deshaun. Is this a make or break game for either team? And do one of these fierce rivals need it more so than the other?
I think it's close to a make or break game for both. It's definitely, I like to think it's a make or break game for Michigan. I like to think that the first game was actually the make or break game for Michigan. I don't know if it's really the make or break game for Michigan State, but they don't have a ton of wins that are really credible on their resume until they, I don't know if they play Purdue again or Wisconsin again, maybe a couple ranked teams, but the Big Ten has even been pretty down, you know, this year. So it's because of the fact that it's Tom Izzo, because of the fact that it's Michigan State, and because Michigan State has that lottery pick on their team, I think that it is definitely a game that Michigan really, really needs, because the SMU win, I guess it looks okay or whatnot. I guess it's a decent win for them, but you got to get that win against your rivals to really try and go out there and prove a point. Now, as far as Michigan State goes, they just need to keep winning. They've got to beat the teams that are in front of them. Like, if they lose to Wisconsin or they lose to a Purdue, right there on the bubble where you could be looking at not getting in for the first time in somewhere close to about 20 years or so plus under Tom Izzo. But outside of that, you have to be able to beat the team that you're supposed to be in front of you. And that team that Michigan State is supposed to beat is Michigan. And they have to go out there and do that tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Correct. I agree entirely. Deshaun Tate, CBS radio producer and host in Atlanta. Deshaun, thanks so much for calling in from Houston. And hopefully you have a safe trip back.
Isaac, as always, thanks for having me, and go green.
Thanks, Deshaun. That about wraps it up for our second segment. We obviously gave you our MSU U of M picks on the day. You heard Deshaun, myself, and Grant all select MSU. We'll see what unfolds tonight. But coming right after this second break, we got 5 minutes. We'll talk about the NFL Pro Bowl selections and maybe one snub from it as well. You're listening to WKR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, regular engineer and co-host, filling in for Al Martin. He's flying back up from Arizona. Want to give a special thanks to Deshaun Tate, CBS radio producer and host in Atlanta. He's currently actually in Houston, still recovering from that loss in the Super Bowl for the Atlanta Falcons. Rough one right there. But that wasn't the only news to come out of the NFL this past weekend. Of course, the NFL Hall of Fame class of 2017 was announced, and I'm going to give a special shout-out to LT, LaDainian Tomlinson, Terrell Davis, Jerry Jones, Jason Taylor, Kurt Warner, Morn Anderson, and then also Kenny Easley, safety for the Seahawks. So all of those guys definitely deserved, especially LT, somebody I loved coming up watching. 31 touchdowns in a season. That's one record that I think might never be touched even. LT, one of the most fantastic running backs ever to suit up. And how about Terrell Davis as well? 2,000 passing yards. Jerry Jones, yeah, I guess he's improved the brand. I'm not so big on the owner induction, however, but, you know, still give it to him. Jason Taylor, DN for the Dolphins for most of his career, 139.5 sacks throughout, seventh most time in NFL history. No arguing that one. Kurt Warner led multiple teams to the Super Bowl, and you know what? He came out of nowhere during the 99 season to become league and Super Bowl MVP with a 65% completion rate and 4,353 yards and 41 touchdowns. Still good for a lot of recognition right now on that season. And then also Morin Anderson, a great Saints kicker, had a 63-yarder, so can hardly hold that against him. And Kenny Easley as well, safety for the Seahawks from 81 to 87, and Defensive Player of the Year winner in 1984. Good for all those guys. They deserve to get in. But how? Yeah, Morin Anderson, also a Spartan. Thank you, Drew Henderson, our engineer for the day, remind me, and Brad Walker behind the glass. But there's a snub. There is a forgotten man amongst that bunch. And you know what? He didn't even make the top 10 of consideration. You already know who I'm talking about. The mercurial, the controversial, the divisive Terrell Owens. And whether it's doing push-ups on his lawn, calling out his quarterback, crying for his quarterback, or making some of the most mind-bogglingly memorable catches that you've ever seen in an NFL game, this guy captivated the public. He was enthralling. He was charismatic. He was great for the game of football. But more than anything, he was second in NFL career receiving yards, third in touchdowns, and didn't even make it to the top 10 of consideration. That's outrageous. I'm as much of a fan as anybody for considering what players bring to the table holistically off the field, on the field. But Terrell Owens didn't commit any crime, something like that. Media members, it's time to put aside your bias against this guy when covering a story. Terrell Owens, second or third best receiver ever, belongs in the Hall of Fame. You've been listening to WKR's Current Sports with me, Isaac Constance. Al Martin, back on the air tomorrow, same time, same place, 1 to 2 p.m. You've been listening to WKR AM 870. Have a great day, people.